Furthermore, we have religious texts, and they come in two different versions. One is not so popular, but was extremely important to the Hittites. These are texts that describe rituals. The Hittite kings love to explain in excruciating detail all of the different rites they must perform. Hittite temples usually have a little washroom off to the right as you enter. There's all sorts of ritual purity that has to be maintained. And in this sense, the Hittites are very much in keeping with most worship in the ancient world. That is, approaching the god requires purity, it requires proper ceremony, and the action has to be performed along prescribed lines. If you mumble the words, if you foul up in any way the ritual, the gods will not hear you, or what is worse, the gods will get angry. And when Teshub, the weather god, gets angry and starts hurling thunderbolts at you, there are no innocent bystanders. The community suffers. And you will see this repeated again in Greek and Roman pagan worship, and this continues well into the Christian era, too, where pagans are constantly telling their Christian critics, no, you must appease the gods. One king, Merciless II, who was the son of Supulilamis and will appear in Lecture 6 again, he boasts that he was in the middle of a campaign and realized, oh, I had not performed the ceremony to the weather god appropriately. Let's break off the campaign, trek back to Hattusas, and do it over, just to make sure that we win on the battlefield. So to the Hittites and to all peoples of the ancient Near East, these rites were extremely important. And very often, war was conceived as a war between competing deities. My deity is stronger than yours, not a religious war in any kind of a crusader sense of the Middle Ages, but nonetheless, the supernatural protectors were important. The other type of literature that comes down to us would be something more familiar. That would be myths and legends, historical accounts. Some of them are naively charming. You read these early mythological accounts of gods of Asia Minor, especially one known as the myth of the missing god. Telepenu is a god of vegetation. He disappears and all the vegetation dies, fertility languishes until the god is rediscovered and brought back to his particular function. This is a myth that recurs in a number of traditions in the Near East. It appears in Greece with the Demeter Kore story, where Kore is taken to the underworld, but in the Hittite version has a sort of folksy Anatolian twist to it. Telepenu gets angry for reasons quite obscure to us, and we're told in the account he's so angry that he puts his left boot on his right foot and his right boot on his left, and it kind of storms out, sort of a yeoman type. And he's finally tracked down by a little bee sent by a goddess that stings him. He gets very angry and annoyed at this. And many of the myths are really very ancient Anatolian stories. We call them etiological myths that explain conditions or some type of tradition or ritual. And they're being dressed up in more dignified language. Some of them still retain that very early Anatolian tradition. Others, however, especially the myths of the combats of the weather god, Teshub, or the generations of gods, the story of the overthrow of the older gods by younger gods. These stories feed into later Greek mythology, particularly Hesiod's Theogony, seems to go back to Hittite and Hurrian prototypes. A number of these myths show very strong influence from Mesopotamia and particularly from the Hurrian peoples. And these myths are far more elevated, the language is more dignified, and it shows the type of adaptation that occurs quite frequently in ancient civilizations, where a civilization that has achieved political power is now trying to dignify these ancient elemental cults by assimilating them to the better-known stories of the higher civilizations. And we have a whole group of literature texts coming from the late Hittite Empire that suggest that this is what's going on. And in part, this is being presided over and inspired by the Hittite emperors for their own purposes. As patrons of the arts, the Hittite emperor assumes now a special role in society, which is a new role that he's carved for himself, quite different from his military and legal functions. And this is characteristic of the Hittite kings of the later period. Foremost, the Hittites are seen as extremely successful in architecture and arts. And here we're dealing with a rather fragmentary record, although one that keeps being added to year after year as Various archaeologists, particularly Turkish archaeologists, make new discoveries.